the news the government does not want you to know. Here's your host, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Election Day is less than 4 months away. Our choices, John McCain or Barack Obama. Do you know who you're voting for? Well, one of the easiest ways, or fairest ways, perhaps, to choose between the candidates is to look at their positions on various issues. But then there's the question of whether the candidate really believes that position, or whether they might change when they're president. Is the candidate consistent, or do they do what the media calls flip-flopping? Well, both John McCain and Barack Obama have been accused of flip-flopping, but are they really changing their positions? You know, when you have a complex position on a complex issue, and there, many of the issues facing America are not exactly simple, the nuances of the issue, understanding that sometimes you can feel this way and sometimes that way, and you can have a nuanced position that's actually very consistent. So which is it? Is it flip-flop or is it nuance? We're going to explore the positions of John McCain and Barack Obama throughout this hour and find out, did they flip-flop? And I'm going to encourage you to come in and give me your analysis as well. This is a live show. It's easy to do. Just call 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can let me know whether you agree or disagree with my analysis. We've also got two trivia questions that are going to come up by the end of the hour. The first is, what place did John McCain get in school? We all graduated various places in our college, you know, top 1%, top 2%. What was John McCain's? Was it the top 1%, top 5%, top 10%? Was he in the top half, top 99%? The answer at the bottom of the hour. Also, which senator, because of course they're both senators, Barack Obama or John McCain, which one missed the most votes? Those will be the questions at the bottom of the hour. Now, let's get to the question of flip-flops, because there are a number of things that both candidates have been accused of flip-flopping on. Let's just go, we'll go back and forth between them. First, let's talk about John McCain and torture. Now, John McCain, as we all know, was a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. In fact, there was quite a little bit of a ruckus over what General Wesley Clark, former NATO commander of all the troops of NATO, Supreme Allied Commander, said when he said that, let's face it, being in a plane and being shot down does not, in fact, make you qualified to be president. I actually agree with Wes Clark on that, to be clear, that General Clark was valuing John McCain's service, as we all do, as I certainly do, but merely being in a plane and getting shot down, that is not, in and of itself, a reason to suggest that you are a good general. Perhaps being a good general means having the right ideas at the right time. But what about torture? Let's talk about torture. John McCain was tortured. He was brutally tortured. In fact, he was tortured so badly that at one point he even said some nasty things about the United States. No one thinks he believed them. I certainly do not. But it just shows the power and how badly he was tortured. So you would think that someone like John McCain would take a very strong stance against the United States doing torture. And indeed, he did a few years ago. A few years ago, there was a bill that John McCain wrote and proposed requiring our military not to torture. And Bush and Cheney wanted an exception to that bill. They wanted an exception to allow the CIA to torture. Well, John McCain, on that bill, allowed the exception to go through. Because he said at that time, well, I don't think they'll actually torture. Now it's come out that the CIA has indeed tortured. In fact, they've actually choreographed the exact methods to be used. Things like stress positions, use of dogs, putting someone out in the cold for days on end, and yes, far more gruesome things like water torture. So another bill came up, and this bill would prohibit even the CIA from conducting torture. After all, torture, it's against the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution. It's against the Geneva Conventions. John McCain had been tortured himself. You would think that John McCain would have a consistent position on torture, ban it entirely. What was his position? He changed his mind. He changed his mind. He said, well, the military can't torture, but the CIA can torture. I'm for torture in some cases, but against it in other cases, depending on who's doing it. If the president's torturing, it's okay. If the military's torturing, it's not okay. Is that a flip-flop? Verdict, yes. It is a flip-flop. There's no other way about it. I think you're either for torture or against torture. John McCain was against torture when he had it, and then against it when he had a bill, but now he's for torture. Let's now look at one for Barack Obama. Barack Obama, On the question of public financing, on that question, all the candidates in the Democratic primary were asked whether or not they would take public financing. Actually, before I get to that, I have a caller here who has a question about, I assume about John McCain. I don't know. Mike from Centerville, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Oh, we lost Mike. Oh, well. But that shouldn't make you hesitate to call in. Please, Mike, you can call back, or anyone else can call in. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's get right to Barack Obama and public financing. On this issue, all the Democratic candidates were asked in the primary, would they take public financing, and all of them raised their hands. Now, you didn't get a chance to speak as to the nuances of the issue, to say exactly what they supported and what they didn't support. But on public financing, they all simply raised their hands. Well, public financing is a complex issue because, well, let's face it, the way you finance public campaigns is a very complex thing. So on public financing, Barack Obama simply raised his hand and said that he'd accept it. But Barack Obama supports changing the whole system as we have now, making sure that there's not a huge advantage to people who are very wealthy, for example, or that 527 groups, subgroups can make up lies about candidates. So he wants to change the whole system. Did he flip-flop on this issue? Yes, he did. Barack Obama raised so much money that he felt he didn't need the public financing. But at the end of the day, I don't think the public cares too much about this flip-flop. The way you run a campaign, I don't think is true to the core of your principles as something like, say, torture is. That I think people understand. You either have this strong reaction where you want to torture people or you don't think we should torture people. Whereas how you finance your campaign, I don't think the American people care too much about. Plus, Barack Obama never had a chance to explain the nuance of it. So, yes, he did flip-flop, but I don't think it's as important issue. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Mike from Centerville. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me on. I'm hearing an echo myself. The question of the moment is the Justice Department and the Bush administration has put in a litmus test for hiring of career civil servants. These aren't political people who are going to leave at the end of 2 years. These are people who are coming into federal service that if you've ever done anything that would be considered liberal, well, we're not going to hire you. And I think that's wrong. I think it's against the law, and I think it puts the integrity of the United States Justice Department at question. This was in the Post a week ago, but you weren't on last week for me to call in.
Okay. Well, thank you for your point, Mike. I appreciate it, and it's absolutely true, of course. His point is that it is against the law in the Justice Department to hire someone based on their ideology. Now, you understand in the government, there's two kinds of positions. There's the political positions, and there's the civil servant positions. And there's always been a very important separation because the civil servants decide important things, like whether or not to prosecute someone for a crime. And they go from administration to administration. Some of them are very highly ranked in their schools and do very well, and some of them don't. And people are supposed to be judged on the merits, on whether or not they would make a good prosecutor. But it is true, as Mike from Centerville points out, that the Justice Department has now been proved to have broken the law, and to have hired people based on political positions. If someone worked for Amnesty International, they weren't hired. If somebody worked for a Republican congressman, they were hired, even if they were at the bottom of their class. Which brings us back to that trivia question I had about John McCain, by the way. And I can tell you now, well, we'll go this throughout the hour, he was not in the top 5% of his class. Sorry, didn't make the top 5%. Hillary Clinton, by the way, was number one in her class at Yale Law School. John McCain did not make the top 5%, but we'll be going through the hour and finding out. The point is that generally the people who are hired are those in the top 5%. It's called the Honors Program. I know many prosecutors. I went to Yale Law School myself, and many of them were hired with the very best in their class. Mike's point is right that the Justice Department was not hiring those people. Now the question is, what do we do about it? The law is that they broke the law, so now they're suing and they're going to get damages. But what do you do with all the people that were hired? What do you do with all the substandard people that are there? If you can't hire or fire based on political motivation, and the Justice Department already did so, what do you do with all the people that are there? In my view, you got to get a clean slate. I don't ever normally believe in firing civil servants who are doing their job. In fact, that's against the law as well. But sometimes the best redress to lawbreaking is to do the same thing. I think because all these people were hired illegally, if and when the Obama administration comes in, they have to do the right thing. Fire them all, whether they're good or bad, and then rehire based solely on merit. Thank you for your call, Mike. Let me get back, though, to my issue of flip-flops. And let's look at the next flip-flop for John McCain. One of the most interesting flip-flops he gave was when he ran for election against George Bush. It had to do with the Confederate flag. Like the issue of torture, the Confederate flag is an issue that has very, very strong resonance in a lot of Americans. A lot of emotion there. A lot of African Americans think of Confederate flag, a lot of white Americans think of the Confederate flag as a defense of slavery, that it defends the proposition that people could hold other people in chains. So a lot of African Americans, a lot of white Americans are very much angry and against the Confederate flag. Now, there are a number of white Americans in the South who don't see the Confederate flag that way. Many of their great-grandparents, great-grandparents died fighting for the Confederacy, and they support the flag. So John McCain knew that particularly Republicans are much more likely to take the position that the Confederate flag is a good thing rather than a bad thing. And in South Carolina, first he was against the Confederate flag, but then he saw he was losing. And when he saw he was losing, John McCain immediately went and changed positions and said, no, 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 I support flying the Confederate flag over the South Carolina Capitol. Then, 3 days later, after he lost the South Carolina primary, he switched back again and said, actually, I really don't support the flag. And then he made an astonishing admission. He said, I just said that to get elected. He said, I know I never supported the Confederate flag, but I was against it, and then I was for it, and then I was against it, and I completely did it only to get the votes of the people of South Carolina. And he even had said he was cynical about it. Now, I don't know what we're supposed to think of a politician that does that. The press praised John McCain for being honest about his lying. It was a very interesting kind of thing. He admitted to having changed his position for political reasons, and the media praised him for having admitted his cynical lie. I don't know. I kind of think when a guy does a cynical lie to get elected like that, particularly about something as emotional and as racist a symbol as the Confederate flag is considered by most Americans, including myself, I don't think he should get a pass. I think that was a clear flip-flop that gives us a strong indication into John McCain's character. And we're going to go through and do a bunch more flip-flops. But one thing, interestingly, is you're trying to find out the character of the people you're voting for, whether it's Obama or McCain, or, you know, for that instance, if you want to bring up Bob Barr or Ralph Nader, I guess they're running too. We can talk about them as well. One of the interesting things I found that hasn't been reported much is the gambling habits of the two of them. Now, you probably haven't seen this on CNN. Hey, that's why I give you the inside scoop. Do you know the gambling habits of Barack Obama and John McCain? Barack Obama is a poker player. John McCain is a craps player. They happen to have very different gambling habits. When I come back from break, I will tell you the difference. It's interesting because of what it says for their character. Toll-free number, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. You can call in, comment, ask a question. Feel free to do that. And now I should tell you, John McCain wasn't in the top 10% of his class either. So he wasn't in the top 10%. Was he in the top 20, top 50, top 99? We'll give you all the answers, all the inside scoop at the end of the hour. And who missed the most votes, McCain or Obama? All the news right after this.
This one just books at the library.
Il n'y a plus que des livres à la bibliothèque.
There's more than just books at the library.
I know.
There's more than just books at the library.
I don't want to be hooked to a machine.
I want all the medical treatment available to me.
I wouldn't want my family to have to make this decision.
My doctor knows what's best for me.
An advanced directive is your life on your terms. Talk with your family. Decide what's right for you. Then put it in writing.
Documenting my wishes today means my family won't have to make heart-wrenching decisions later.
To learn more, visit www.putitinwriting.org.
1,200 American youth run away from their homes every day. The National Runaway Switchboard is here to help. 1-800-RUNAWAY. If you are a runaway, thinking about running away from home, or a parent or guardian concerned about issues facing your child, call us 24 hours a day. 1-800-RUNAWAY. In times of crisis, hope is just a phone call away. 1-800-RUNAWAY.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Before the break, I promised I'd tell you about the gambling habits of Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain. Senator Barack Obama is a poker player. He likes to play for a dollar ante, and he's described by his friends and poker players as a very careful, very conservative poker player, one who thinks often before he makes his decision and seems to not win or lose a lot of money. John McCain, just the opposite. John McCain plays craps, and he likes to go for a few thousand dollars a pop. Now, of course, he can do that. John McCain married very well. Well, not the first wife. He married one woman while he was away in Vietnam, came back, and unfortunately, well, he cheated on her with the new wife. But the second wife, he married very well. That is Cindy McCain, and she is an heiress to a huge beer fortune and is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So he spends her money very well, throws thousands of dollars at a pop on the crap game, and he's said to have liked the excitement. And it's interesting to me in terms of character. I mean, people can gamble however they want, but do you think that gambling suggests character? Do you think a careful, considered poker player would be more careful and considered than someone who gambles everything on the roll of the dice? How would they be as president? We don't know. Guess we'll find out. Let's go back, though, to the question of flip-flops. And let's go, we did McCain, let's go back to Barack Obama, and let's deal with the very difficult question of abortion. Now, some have suggested, particularly the right wing, the Republicans, are arguing, in fact, that Barack Obama is a serial flip-flopper. So how is he on abortion? Well, Barack Obama supports a woman's right to choose. But recently, he came out saying that he didn't think a late-term abortion should be had solely for mental reasons. What he said is that if not for an early-term abortion, but for a late-term abortion, he thinks there has to be some threat to the health or to the life of the mother to have a late-term abortion. I should say to you that even though I consider myself pro-choice, I agree with Barack Obama's position on this, and I don't think it's a very radical position. Early, when the fetus is a blastocyst, is a few cells, it can't think, can't feel, at a stage when a blastocyst can miscarry, that's a stage where Barack Obama, like me, thinks that a woman should be able to have an abortion freely. But let's face it, a few weeks before birth, a fetus is a lot more like a baby than a lot less like a few cells. And in that case, I believe, as does Barack Obama, that only if the mother's life or health is at risk, obviously if her life or health is at risk, her life or health takes precedence over the fetus. But only then should there be the possibility of an abortion. So if it's a serious mental health kind of thing, Obama and I support having an abortion. But if it's just a woman changing her mind, no, Barack Obama doesn't support an abortion. And interestingly, most liberals, I would dare say, don't. I think most people who are pro-choice, as I consider myself, wouldn't say that an 8-month-year-old fetus, a woman should be able to have an abortion just because she changed her mind or just because she's feeling depressed or blue. This is an example of what I call nuance. It's understanding that abortion is a difficult issue. You can be in many, many points on the scale, aren't you? From believing that a sperm and an egg are sacred, as some religions teach, and therefore you should never have sex outside of marriage. Indeed, you should never have sex without another human being there because it's a waste. Indeed, I guess they would argue that every month a woman loses a potential life. That's an extreme pro-life position. There are others who are extremely pro-life who think that if there's 4,000 frozen conceived eggs, as there are, in fact, there's 400,000, that we should implant them in women because those are lives ready to be born. That would be an extreme position. And there are extreme pro-choice advocates and who believe that an abortion is always okay, even if it's a day before birth, even if the woman just changes her mind. Barack Obama is not of either school. He's more on the pro-choice side than the pro-life side, but he's not an extreme pro-choice advocate. This is not a flip-flop, my friends. This is nuance. And interestingly, he never changed his position, just as I haven't changed my position. But some people who don't understand the nuances of the issue may think of it as so, and Republicans know that, and so they're pouncing on it, trying to make you think it's a flip-flop. But let me tell you this. I used to work on the House Judiciary Committee as a lawyer for a high-ranking Democrat on that committee. And I wrote an amendment that my boss sponsored, and it was the amendment, interestingly, to the partial birth abortion bill. I'm sure you're probably aware of that bill. It's a bill that would ban a lot of late-term abortions. And that amendment said that if a woman's life or health is at stake, and by this, my boss meant, and he wrote in there, physical, long-term physical health complications, that then she could have an abortion, but otherwise, he was willing to ban it. Interestingly, the pro-life advocates, the people who supported the partial birth ban bill, the one that the United States Supreme Court found unconstitutional, didn't want my boss's amendment. It's interestingly, the amendment, and I'll say the name, there's no reason not to, it's by Congressman Barney Frank. This amendment would have made the bill constitutional. This amendment would actually have prohibited some late-term abortions, the same ones that Obama and I and he want to prevent. The ones where there's no danger to the woman, but a woman decides a few weeks before pregnancy to have an abortion anyway. Pro-life advocates didn't want the bill, even though it would prohibit abortions. Now, that may sound strange to you. Why wouldn't they want a bill that would prohibit abortions? Because the pro-life advocates thought it more important to overturn Roe v. Wade, and they wanted to do the unconstitutional bill. They wanted the United States Supreme Court to strike it down because that way they could get a lot of money from their base, they get a lot of people angry, they get a lot of people upset, and even though there would be more abortions. So it's a very complex issue. In this case, Barney Frank, Barack Obama, and I would be prohibiting more abortions than the pro-life advocates. The pro-life advocates wanted the unconstitutional partial birth abortion bill and not the constitutional one. Now, they could have passed both. They could have made their point, made their strong statement, passed the unconstitutional one, and then passed the constitutional one supported by everyone in Congress. Then they would make their point, but still prohibit a very rare, they're actually an extremely few number, but a few abortions that liberals and conservatives both wanted to prohibit. But the right wing didn't want that either. Why not? Why wouldn't they want that? They could make their point and still ban some abortions, because by doing that, it would show that liberals could be reasonable on this issue. The bill supported by my boss, Barney Frank, was supported by 90% of Democrats and 100% of Republicans. That kind of bipartisan coming together where everyone agrees was something that the pro-life advocates didn't want because it showed that you could have a reasonable compromise on as touchy and difficult and emotional an issue as abortion. Interestingly, Obama has taken that bipartisan position, that position that the great majority of Americans agree with, wherever you stand on the abortion issue. And now they're calling it a flip-flop. It seems that that's how the Republicans are trying to deal with Obama's nuance, trying to say he changed position. But as I hope I've explained to you, he hasn't changed position at all. Toll-free number is 888-48-MARK if you want to call in and argue with anything I've said or ask me a question about it. 888-488-6275. Let's go back to John McCain and the issue of his own flip-flops. One flip-flop he made just recently was on the case of offshore oil drilling. Now, this is a very recent change in position. As late as May 16th, John McCain made it clear in a speech, a political speech he gave at a rally, that he was opposed to offshore oil drilling. He presented himself as an environmentalist, as someone who didn't want to see oil spills like the Exxon Valdez spill coming and harming the beaches off the coast of Florida and California. As many know, there are already 68 million acres of ocean under lease right now by oil companies that are not being used. Why aren't they being used? Well, they're far off the shore. They're way deep. If there were an oil spill there, it wouldn't harm the environment at all. So the oil companies are saving those for a rainy day, perhaps. Although you'd think with oil prices as high as they are, they'd be drilling there. No, they think that with the oil prices being this high, again, if they don't drill, that'll keep the prices up, and then they can drill in more places. They won't just take the $68 million they have deep, deep water, but they'll get off the coast of Florida and off the coast of California and off the coast of Texas. So what's John McCain's on this position? Well, he was against it before he was for it. He was originally against it as recently as May 16th, but within 2 weeks, John McCain had changed his position. What had changed his mind? Well, George Bush started talking about it. Dick Cheney started talking about it. And John McCain knows that he wants to follow their policies, that there are Republicans who very much love and respect George Bush and Dick Cheney, and he wants their vote. So if he has to change his position to make it a more Bush-like position, a more Cheney-like position, John McCain will flip-flop all he likes. And he did flip-flop on that issue. Back to Barack Obama. One of the most major things people have talked about with Obama in the case of whether he's changing position or not is the question of Iraq. Now, this is vital to Obama's position. Vital because Obama largely distinguished himself against Hillary Clinton in the primaries as being the candidate who was against the war at the time that Congress gave authorization. Now, as you know, about half the Democrats were for it, half were against it. Hillary Clinton voted for it. This is one of the major ways in which Barack Obama distinguished himself from her, and he won many of the people who felt that the Iraq war was never a good idea to begin with. He also helped convince many Americans who thought the war was good to begin with, but then later turned out they discovered that they were lied to about weapons of mass destruction and connections to Al-Qaeda, and so they understood that, yes, he was right to begin with. Well, in Fargo, North Dakota last week, Barack Obama was talking about his plan. Now, many of us have heard the plan before. It is that he's going to withdraw a brigade or two every month, and then the goal is they'll all be out in 16 months. But Barack Obama has always said that he's going to be as careful getting out as we were careless going in. He's always said that as soon as he gets into office, he's going to talk with the military commanders. He doesn't have all the information now because, let's face it, the Bush administration won't give him all the information now. It's wrong of them not to inform them, but there's nothing he can do about it. So he doesn't have all the information now due to the wrongness of the Bush administration trying to keep him in the dark as a way to win an election rather than protect the American people. But when he becomes president, that first day he will sit down with the military commanders and he'll find out what's going on and use that information in terms of getting the troops out of Iraq. Is this a flip-flop or isn't it a flip-flop? When we come back, I'm going to explore the nuances of Barack Obama's position on Iraq and try to determine whether or not he really has changed his mind. Oh, and as to John McCain's, how did he do in school? I'm afraid he was not in the top 20%. But what ranking was he? We'll find out at the end of the hour.
Osama bin Laden calls getting nuclear weapons a religious duty.
Today, materials that can be used to make nuclear weapons are stored in more than 40 countries.
Sometimes protected by just a chain-link fence.
Yet not enough is being done to lock down these materials
before terrorists steal them. Why did we learn all this?
My mother.
My son.
My sister-in-law.
Were all murdered September 11th.
Help protect America.
Together we can.
Please join us.
The stem cell issue is being debated throughout the country. Truth is, most everyone has an opinion, even if they don't know the facts.
Let's stop arguing and start really understanding the potential of stem cell research.
For us and for millions of Americans living with disabilities, get the facts.
Call 1-877-842-3442 for free information from the Stem Cell Research Foundation. That's 1-877-842-3442.
Following the tragic events of September 11th, there have been hundreds of violent attacks against innocent Americans.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
Remember, please stop the hate.
We're stronger when we are united.
Remember.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
One nation under God.
Indivisible.
With liberty.
And justice.
For all.
In America, there's either room for everyone or it's not America.
Don't pick the wrong fight.
Let's keep America land of the free.
Stop the hate.
Planning a home renovation? Put this at the top of your to-do list.
Because after 10 years, none of you are protected against tetanus and another potentially fatal disease, diphtheria.
A minor injury, such as a cut or a scrape, can put you at risk for a tetanus infection.
And while safety gear offers some protection, an up-to-date vaccination called the TD booster is the best insurance against tetanus.
So get the TD booster. If it's been 10, do it again.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're discussing the various positions of Obama and McCain. and whether they've changed those positions. Have they flip-flopped on those positions, or are they simply emphasizing a nuanced position? If you want to comment or ask me a question, feel free to do so. It's a live show. It is your right to do that. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. And if you know the answer to my trivia questions, you can call in as well. Question number one, what place did John McCain get at the Naval Academy when he went there for college? I've already said it wasn't in the top 20%. And question number two, who missed the most votes this Senate? Was it Barack Obama or John McCain? We'll get to those questions at the end of the hour. Let me go back, though, to the question of flip-flops. And we were talking about, before the break, about Barack Obama and Iraq. So Barack Obama has always said that he wants to get us out of Iraq, he wants to end this war, he wants to bring combat troops home in 16 months, but he'll be as careful getting out as we were careless going in. He said that he will look and decide, he will take us out of the most stable areas first, he'll remove our troops from those areas first. And then in North Dakota, Fargo, North Dakota, he was asked the question of whether or not that he would not look and listen to facts on the ground. You see, the Republicans and those gotcha people in the media are trying to paint Barack Obama in an impossible corner. They want to say that he won't listen to facts on the ground, so he's not being a good commander. At the same time, if he says he will listen to facts on the ground, they're going to say, well, he's breaking his promise to get them out in 16 months. See, it's a lose-lose proposition for Obama. It's a catch-22. He can't win. Either he has to say, well, I may under some circumstances not get them out in 16 months, in which case he'll say, aha, flip-flopper. Or he has to say, well, I'm not going to listen to facts on the ground. No matter what happens, I'll get them out in 16 months. At which point they'll say, ha, imprudent president. It's a gotcha moment. So they asked Obama in Fargo, North Dakota, and he tried to explain what is, let's face it, a nuanced position, which is his goal is to get them out in 16 months. But obviously he'd have to look at the facts on the ground. He'd have to look at the stability of the situation. He'd have to look at the safety of American troops. Well, the media went wild. Aha! Aha, he's flip-flopped. He's changed his mind. But has he really changed his mind? I don't know that it's that different from anything else that Barack Obama has said on Iraq. You know, when asked whether he would get all the troops out, we would have no presence in Iraq, he was asked there in the Democratic debates when all the Democrats were standing there, not a single candidate except, I think, Kucinich said that they would. So, no, he wasn't going to promise he would get every one of them out. Here's the difference, I think, between John McCain and Barack Obama in Iraq. Now, John McCain has said they'll be there 100 years, but then even John McCain has said, well, maybe if we can pull some out, I'll do that. So someone argued there's no difference, Obama and McCain on Iraq. Both say they'd like to bring them home, and both say if they need to stay there, they'll be there. I think there's a huge difference. I think the difference is what you might call in law the burden of proof, or the presumption, or you know what I'm talking about, what someone would rather do. We all know the difference between someone who really, really wants to go someplace. And sure, if there's an accident or something, they'll stop. They have to. They'll help the injured. They may not get to that place, but their goal is to get to that place. And then we all know the people that would rather stay home. Sure, if someone forces them against their will to go, they'll go. But they'd rather stay home. That's the difference between Obama and McCain on Iraq. Obama's default position is, we're going home. And barring some extreme emergency, we're going home. He's going to take the troops out, a brigade or two at a time. He's going to consult with military commanders. He's going to look at the situation on the ground. He's going to do it smartly, heck, the way he plays poker, orderly. But his goal is to end the war. His goal is to bring them home. And absent a terrible emergency, that's what he plans to do. John McCain, very different. John McCain's goal is to stay in Iraq forever. His goal is to be there 100 years. His goal is to have permanent bases in the region. His goal is to be, well, I guess like the old British Empire, to have troops all around the world, even in countries that don't want us there. And sure, if the Iraq government forces us out, maybe they vote to bring the troops home, although I'm not even sure that's enough for John McCain, if things force his hand and he's forced to bring the troops home, then he'll do it, but he'll do so unwillingly and only as a last resort. To me, there's just miles between those two positions. The default position of we need to end this war, but if we have to keep a little bit there, I will in emergency. And the default position of we have to stay there forever. And, well, you know, if you force me to remove a few, I will. To me, those are miles apart. They may sound the same, but they're very different. And that's the difference between those two positions. Again, You want to call in? It's 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. So we've talked about Barack Obama. Let's go back to John McCain. One of the interesting things on John McCain is also on abortion. By the way, I was brought up in the break, a good point I should make about late-term abortions and just how rare they are. There's no more than a few hundred, and maybe not even 100 in a year, far fewer than the millions of abortions that occur every year. So I want to be clear that even the abortions that would have been eliminated in the so-called partial birth abortion bill, that bill labeled by the people who are pro-life, would be really a minuscule number. And I should also, I guess, point out that there's no such thing as a medical partial birth abortion. The term is dilation and extraction, but that's a bit off the subject. Back to abortion, though. On the issue of Roe v. Wade, this is a very important point. This is fundamental, I think. Constitutional provision. John McCain, in the past, has said that he would not be for overturning Roe v. Wade. Has he changed position? Yes, he has. In this election, he has said that he is for overturning Roe v. Wade. Why did he change his position? You know what? I don't think anyone in the media has ever asked him this. Here's a very clear flip-flop on a fundamental issue to the American people, and I don't think he's being asked about it. That's a good question for the media. What about Barack Obama on constitutional issues? Well, we have the Second Amendment came up. You know what the Second Amendment is. I will pull it out of my Constitution. It is the amendment on guns. The Second Amendment says, and I quote, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." Now, it is my firm belief that the Second Amendment is talking about a militia. And I've given shows on this in the past. By the way, if you want to see where I've talked about this in detail, go to my website, radioinsidescoop.com, and check out my show, particularly on this issue. I think that the evidence is actually overwhelming, that this is all about protecting state militias, protecting the right of people to be against a tyrannical federal government in a state militia. Now, Barack Obama disagrees with me, and some would say that's a flip-flop. But actually, Obama, even though I don't agree with his position, has been consistent on this. He believes the Second Amendment conveys an individual right. I happen to not don't think it does. But is it a flip-flop? No, it's just a consistent position where we happen to disagree. The interesting thing on the gun issue, though, is when it comes down to practicality, as apart from the constitutional issue, Obama's positions and mine, and actually the Supreme Court's, are very similar. They all believe that people who have mental illnesses shouldn't have guns, that people who've committed violent felonies shouldn't have guns, that children shouldn't have guns without their parents being there, that, in fact, there can be registration and restrictions on guns. Barack Obama agrees with all of that. The problem with that in terms of Supreme Court analysis is that the Second Amendment, as I read it, it either means it's only about militias or it's about individuals owning guns. And if individuals can own guns, heck, why not felons and mentally ill? There's no difference in the text. I still like my interpretation better than Obama's in the courts. But the point is, at least in the case of flip-flops, it's not a flip-flop. That's Obama's position, and, well, he's sticking to it. Back to John McCain. John McCain, 8 years ago, called Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson agents of intolerance. He also called Grover Norquist, that famous tax-cutting man who wants government to be so small that he can drown it in a bathtub, he called Grover Norquist corrupt. Has John McCain changed his position? He has. In fact, he's completely flip-flopped on this one. Not only speaking at Falwell's University, Liberty University, before Falwell died, but also saying that Grover Norquist is a man that he can work with. He's been reaching out to Pat Robertson. Interestingly, even though these were so-called agents of intolerance, even though Falwell and Robertson said some pretty extreme things, notably more extreme than even Jeremiah Wright has said. Jeremiah Wright, of course, as you know, said that America's foreign policy had something to do with September 11th, that in fact it was blowback, that our chickens have come home to roost. Well, Robertson and Falwell didn't blame it on American foreign policy. They blamed it on Americans here at home. They blamed 9/11 on feminists, on pagans, on homosexuals. Now, that would seem to me to be even more extreme than blaming 9/11 on U.S. foreign policy. But has John McCain specifically distanced himself from that? No. No, in fact, he's run toward Falwell. He's run toward Robertson. Interesting, the media hasn't really focused on this. He distanced himself from Pat Hagee, finally. John Hagee, John Hagee was the minister who claimed that God wanted the Holocaust because he wanted the Jews to go back to Israel. Finally, McCain did distance himself from John Hagee after flip-flopping, after trying to get Hagee's endorsement. But we know that on the question of Robertson and Falwell, he hasn't changed his mind at all. We got a caller on the line. Leo from Fairfax, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark. Question again about this Second Amendment business. Is it under? Do I understand correctly that the justices have merely eliminated the issue of grammar from the First Amendment? Is that their problem?
Well, I can read it again to you. There is a question about the comma, whether there's a comma. Let me read you again the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, Justice Stevens says that the sentence means what it means, what it says it means. In other words, there's no superfluous words in the Constitution. It says that because a militia is necessary to a free state security, to the security of Virginia or New York or Georgia, that the right of the people to keep and bear arms, this military term, bearing arms, shall not be infringed. Justice Scalia, of course, has the contrary view. In Justice Scalia's view, the whole first 10 words are superfluous. A well-regulated...
Well, that's what I'm wondering about. Yeah. I never thought that. That's what you get for putting activist judges like Scalia and those guys on the court.
He said it was prefatory.
They just start monkeying with the Constitution and announcing that while spelling may be okay, clearly grammar doesn't count.
Yeah, well, Scalia actually went beyond grammar and basically says that the words are merely prefatory, as he put it. A well-regulated militia being necessary to secure a free state, as he put it, is meaningless. Those 10 words, 15 words in the Constitution could just as well not be there. The amendment would have the exact same meaning. It's interesting that, you know, Scalia has so little respect for the words of the Constitution to say, in effect, that these words don't exist when they do exist. Maybe he just has a seeing problem. I don't know, Leo.
Well, maybe it's the all men are created equal. Maybe it's not all. Maybe it should have. Maybe he's making corrections. Should it have said some men?
Yeah, well, maybe he should have just said men are created equal and excluded women. I don't know. But, hey, thanks for your call, Leo.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Let me go back to the question of flip-flops. Let's see, who are we on? We just did John McCain. Let's go to Barack Obama. There's a question on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And this is a very important issue. It's one that I myself have spent a lot of time on. It's a question of whether the president has a right to wiretap us all without a warrant. Of course, I could pick up my Constitution and say that the Fourth Amendment says very clearly the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but a probable cause. What does this mean? This very important meaning in the Bill of Rights. It means that for the president to spy on you, for the government to spy on you, for the state to spy on you, they have to have a reason. They have to have probable cause. They have to have reason to believe that you're involved in some criminal activity. And if they have that reason, they can spy on you. And that's fine, and that's fair, that's the way I want it to be. But if they have no reason to believe you've done anything wrong, then they just can't spy on you. Well, the Bush administration said, we don't care about the Constitution. We don't care about the law. We're going to spy on you anyway. And in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act compromise, they tried to split the baby a bit. We'll go into exactly what that bill entailed and what the compromise bill entailed in examining the ultimate question, did Barack Obama flip-flop? And by the way, John McCain was not in the top 50% of his party.
This is firstgov.gov, where we're obsessed with getting you government information.
Brand new student loan applications on the site, baby.
This calls for a celebration.
Here's your uncle.
So in the end, it was either take the astronaut gig or come work here. What can I say? Duty called.
Dude, that's my cop.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure that's Sam's cop.
Oh, sorry?
Yeah. No. Sam's. No.
Just log on or email us and get what you need.
C, change of address form. That's how it's done.
D, driver's license renewal.
Mm-hmm. E, emailing social security information.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. We'll allow it. All right, Ed. What are those?
Government surplus cars for auction.
You posted those online last time.
No, you did.
I'm posting them online this time.
For all your government information, firstgov.gov.
Ah! Oh, what have we got here? Sometimes you feel tired,
You can't seem to lose those extra pounds off your midsection. And your joints hurt when you take the stairs? Well, you're getting older. But I'm happy to say that there's some simple things we can do to keep you happy and healthy for years to come. We can also lower your risk for some serious diseases the older population is often subject to. Proper nutrition is more important than ever. Your body has changed, you know. Not as many treats. A basic exercise plan, lots of walks and fresh air, and most importantly, come and see me for twice yearly checkups to help ensure the best possible quality of life. Now, how does that sound? Good boy.
Improve the quality of life for your elderly pet. Schedule twice yearly checkups that include preventive care and regular lab work. A message from the veterinary members of the American Animal Hospital Association.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. At the end of this segment, I will give the answers to our two trivia questions. One, who has voted more or less, I should say, in the current Senate? Is it Obama or is it McCain? And two, how did John McCain place in his class? Unfortunately, he was not in the top half. He wasn't in the top 50%. But how low was he? We'll have the answer at the end of the hour. Back to the question of flip-flops. I was talking before the break about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the FISA court. And this is the one issue that I think I've seen the most press on, claiming that Barack Obama has flip-flopped. And it happens to be a very complex issue. It's one I worked on when I was on the Hill, so I happen to know it very well. And I think it's important that you understand the details of this issue, because on this issue, perhaps more than any other, the details matter. We start, of course, with the Fourth Amendment. I read it before the break. The government cannot spy on you unless they have a reason to spy on you. Now, that's true if you're an American citizen. If you're a foreigner, they're spying on French citizens, talking to English citizens. They can spy on anybody. Even the ACLU agrees to that. But the problem is that the FBI, under J. Edgar Hoover, was spying on Americans for no good reason. Specifically, J. Edgar Hoover was spying on Martin Luther King because of his civil rights work, obviously not because he'd committed any crime. So once that was discovered, and there was a lot of controversy about that, the Congress in the 1970s passed the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And it's also known by its nickname FISA, F-I-S-A. What FISA did is it set up a series of secret courts because the president argued, sometimes I have to be able to get a warrant without going before a public court and giving probable cause. So Congress said, okay, we will allow you to go before these secret courts, and they're very easy to get. You can get them in the middle of the night. You can even call 3 days, start spying on someone and get retroactive approval 3 days later. And these courts were the exclusive means, the only way the president was allowed to spy on someone without a warrant. Well, this worked well for some 30 years until George Bush decided he just wasn't going to obey. He decided, you know what, I'm beyond the law. Specifically, his lawyers said that. Under the Constitution, they claimed he didn't have to follow the law. Now, nowhere in the Constitution does it say the president doesn't have to follow the law. And yet, the president said, I don't have to follow the law, I don't have to obey, and he gave permission to a bunch of telecommunications companies to spy on hundreds of millions of Americans. Now, the Republicans tried to pass a bill to make this position permanent. What it would do is it would say to all the telecommunications companies, you are not liable for all the illegal stuff you did. The administration, you're not liable for the illegal stuff you did. And you can continue to do illegal stuff in the future. It will no longer be the exclusive method. The Democrats stood firm. At the time, I was very afraid the Democrats might cave. I argued they should stand firm, and they did. Nancy Pelosi stood firm. Someone who didn't, and I've been very upset with him about this, is Senator Webb of Virginia. He voted for the amendments that would have made the bill better, but when they didn't pass, Webb voted for this awful bill, which would have given the president untrammeled authority to violate the Constitution. Obama did stand firm, though, and was very strong, and said, I will not support this bad bill. So because the Democrats, Webb accepted, stood firm, they came together, and they came to a compromise. Now, the FISA compromise is what everyone's talking about now. And it is a compromise. It has good parts. It has bad parts. One of the good parts of the compromise is it makes it very clear that the FISA courts are exclusive. What does that mean? It means the president can't just spy on anybody. He's got to go to a court to do it. This is the part that they were going to give away on the bad bill that Obama was against. But they stood firm, and they got that change. They also made it clear that they can't spy on Americans, even Americans abroad. They can't target Americans, only foreigners. Again, better than the old bill. They also made clear that you can sue the government if the government violates the law. Very good. The one thing that's in this bill that's bad, and I agree it's a terrible thing, is the bill said to the telecommunications companies that broke the law, it's okay that you broke the law if the president told you to. We're giving you retroactive immunity. Now, Obama was against that. I was against that. But understanding that the new bill is a compromise, it is a change from the old bill. And Obama supports the new bill, doesn't support the old bill. That is not a change in position. It's an understanding that the two bills are very different. Interestingly, a lot on the left don't seem to understand this. Don't seem to understand that you can be against the old bad bill and for the compromise without changing your position, without flip-flopping. He is not, you could, of course, be against the new bill as well. But the point is that it is not a flip-flop on his case. Time's coming to a close. We've got to get to a few more flip-flops. John McCain, he was for ethanol before he was against ethanol. That's a clear flip-flop. That's a pretty easy one. Let me go back to Obama on the faith-based initiative, and this one's an important one. It's an important one because it, like FISA, has a lot of nuance. And I happen to know this bill probably better than anything else I've talked about. Why? Because I'm proud to say I played a major role in defeating H.R. 7, which was George Bush's first faith-based initiative. And yet I strongly support Obama's position. Am I inconsistent? Is it a flip-flop? Not at all. The faith-based issue is fascinating because it's a great example of how George Bush and Karl Rove have sold a lie that has convinced everyone, most all the American people, certainly the media, they don't understand this issue. And by lying to everyone, it's fascinating now how Obama has used it. Let me explain, because it's complex here. The faith-based initiative, what it does, all it does, the only thing George Bush's faith-based initiative does, is it allows the government to discriminate on the basis of religion where it never had before. That's all it does. Now, that's not how it's sold. The faith-based initiative is sold by the administration as we're helping armies of compassion. We're helping religious people get people off of drugs. We're helping religious people, religious organizations feed the poor, feed the hungry, clothe the naked. Doesn't do that at all. Why? Because that's already legal. Ever since the 1960s, in fact, Catholic Charities, United Methodist, Jewish Federation, a number of religious groups have taken federal money and given them for social services. But ever since the 1960s, these organizations have not discriminated because the government won't allow them to, and frankly, because most of them don't want to. In other words, Catholic Charities will clothe you if you're naked or feed you if you're hungry, whether or not you're Catholic. You can be Catholic, you can be Protestant, you can be Muslim, Jewish, you can be atheist or Buddhist. Catholic Charities will help you. The same with Jewish Federation. They will hire, and they do hire, Christians. They hire Muslims. They hire atheists. You don't have to be Jewish to work for Jewish Federation. And this is the way the arrangement has worked for 40 years. And I, like Barack Obama, support that arrangement. I think it's a good one. George Bush, though, put one over on us. Karl Rove tried to trick people. He tried to pretend that the government was not helping religious organizations do social services. And so they made up stuff like, well, if there's a cross on the wall, you can't give social services. That's never been the law. It's simply not true. And so they made it seem like aid to faith-based organizations is what it was all about. And yeah, they wanted discrimination, but that was just a side point. So Obama's done something very clever. He has said, of course I support aid to faith-based organizations. That's already the law. Of course I support the armies of compassion. And in doing so, he looks like he's supporting George Bush's agenda, but he's not. Because on the one difference between the Bush faith-based initiative and current law, the one difference is discrimination. And Obama has made clear that he would say that if you take federal dollars, you can't discriminate on the basis of religion or race or sexual orientation. So Obama supports current law, but he's very cleverly using the same rhetoric the Bush administration used. And in doing so, not only has he not flip-flopped, he's actually supporting a position that the great majority of Americans can support. Don't be fooled on this. And if you have any questions on it, write me at radioinsidescoop.com, because I assure you, I worked on this issue. I know the ins and outs of it. I helped defeat the original one. I strongly support Obama's. So not a flip-flop at all. Let's go to John McCain's last and most important flip-flop, the biggest one of all, the most extreme flip-flop, the one on tax cuts. You see, John McCain said 8 years ago, we can't afford tax cuts. Since then, our deficit has ballooned. We've gone from a surplus under Bill Clinton to the largest deficit in American history. We are owned right now by dictatorships. Mostly China and Saudi Arabia own us. They have so much of our treasury debt that if they were to call it in, our country would be in a shambles. We would have to pay back already hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars to them. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And John McCain wants to put us farther into debt, into more extreme debt, to put more of our fate, American lives and money and economy and well-being in the hands of Saudi dictators and Chinese dictators. This is a huge difference. John McCain used to be fiscally responsible. Now, unfortunately, John McCain has decided, well, he's got to do what the Bushies want. What made him change his mind? The Wall Street Journal. He changed his mind at an interview with the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal made clear they didn't want to have any more of Bush's tax cuts for the rich. And so he went right along, even though it meant massive deficit controlled by Saudi Arabia and China. This is the most severe flip-flop that John McCain has made. And it's done because, let's face it, Republicans do not want the rich to ever pay taxes. They believe some of us were born to serve and some of us were born to rule, and that should never change. So, on the flip-flops issue, what do we have? We have John McCain flip-flopped on torture, the Confederate flag, ethanol, oil drilling, tax cuts, Falwell, Robertson, Norquist, and Roe v. Wade. Obama flip-flopped on public financing, but not on the Second Amendment or FISA or Iraq or the faith-based initiative or late-term abortion. So we have a little flip-flopping by Obama, a lot more by John McCain, and that's why I've given you the full analysis. Now, answer to our trivia questions. First of all, which senator has been there the most? Well, Barack Obama has missed some 30-something percent of the votes. John McCain has missed 58% of the votes. John McCain has missed more votes than anyone in Congress, including Senator Tim Johnson, the senator who suffered a stroke from South Dakota, was out of Senate entirely for a few months. John McCain has missed more votes than even he. He has the record for missed votes of any senator in any Congress in American history. Even though we're paying him $176,000 a year, he has missed more votes. And lastly, how did John McCain do in the Naval Academy? Well, he wasn't in the top 50%, and he wasn't in the top 70%, and he wasn't in the top 90%, and he wasn't in the top 95%, and he wasn't in the top 99%. Unfortunately, there were 899 students, and he didn't make the top 890, which would be the top 99%. He was 894. Sorry, maybe next time, John McCain, you can get out of the bottom 1%. Until then, this is Mark Levine, signing off.